I asked about favorite birthdays because, in fact, it is Hometown's fifth birthday today. This was an easy one for me to come up with the question for this week because of that. Yay! Throughout the sermon today, we are going to look back at some moments as I talk through the first 5 years of Hometown, but also to the next 5 years that are to come and even after that. But one fact about Hometown is Hometown doesn't exist if every one of us here didn't show up. We didn't act on some sort of nudging or pushing or calling from God to be here. From those of us that planted, to those that joined in the first year, the first few years, the middle, or to even recently this past year. Everybody acted on some nudging, on some prompting, on some invitation to just show up. So thank you for acting on that nudge, for showing up and being here. Because now we are a church that comes together under a shared love, devotion, and heart for God. Church doesn't exist without its people, so that's why we're here. But it's that idea of action today that we're going to talk about and we will focus on. That's what we're going to see in Nehemiah today. We're in week two of our series called Brick by Brick through the book of Nehemiah throughout this summer, and how God builds us as followers of him, as well as his church, bit by bit or piece by piece. So a quick recap of last week, if you weren't with us in Nehemiah 1, we met Nehemiah, who's a Jewish man who was also cupbearer to the king. It was King Artaxerxes at this time in the Persian government. Nehemiah is informed of the destruction of the wall that surrounded Jerusalem, and this really distressed Nehemiah. He mourned, he fasted, he prayed, he was really upset because no wall meant no protection for the people. So he asked God to give him favor before the king because Nehemiah knew he needed to do something. And today, Nehemiah is going to indeed act. God put something on Nehemiah's heart. God's going to put something on all of our hearts, a calling, an action, a conviction. But that calling we need to act on. Because God's call requires action, not admiration. It requires action, not just admiration. I want us to think about that today because we got to do something with it. It's not there to just look at and admire. Maybe you got a birthday gift that's one you just put on a shelf and you look at and that's great. God's call is more like that super cool action figure that you play with and you get a little bit dirty and you use. All right, so that's what we're going to look at today. So we're going to read through in three different sections all of Nehemiah chapter 2. Kyle will have it up here on the screens if you want to follow along there. It's bookmarked on the Bibles on your tables. Feel free to use those. If you want to follow along, phones, tablets, computers, all great. I will be in the NIV translation as usual. So let's start Nehemiah chapter 2 verses 1 to 10. It says this: In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought for him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when the city where my ancestors are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" The king said to me, "What is it you want?" Then I prayed to the God of heaven, and I answered the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it." Then the king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked me, "How long will your journey take, and when will you get back?" It pleased the king to send me, so I set a time. I also said to him, "If it pleases the king, may I have letters to the governors of the Trans-Euphrates so that they will provide me safe conduct until I arrive in Judah. And may I have a letter to Asaph, keeper of the royal park, so he will give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel by the temple and for the city wall and for the residence I will occupy." And because the gracious hand of my God was on me, the king granted my request. So I went to the governors of the Trans-Euphrates and gave them the king's letters. The king had also sent army officers and cavalry with me. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites. We'll stop there for a little bit. From a timeline perspective, we're looking at about 4 months from when Nehemiah was informed about the destruction of the wall till now, where we come to now. He spent that time fasting, praying, and mourning. Now it's time to act. It's time to act. So he goes before the king, and the king says to him, "You look sad." Now, this is not standard operating procedure for a cupbearer. He would have put any personal feelings, personal stuff aside, and come very professionally before the king. But he doesn't. And Nehemiah says, in essence, "I have no choice. I have to be sad. I have to hurt. My family line is in trouble. The city is in ruins. The gates are destroyed." And the distinction to make here is he makes this very personal. It's not political. It's not social. It's not cultural. This is personal to him. He hurts personally. So the king simply asks him, "What do you need?" King's a decision maker. King has authority. He keeps it simple. This is his cupbearer. He likes him. What do you need? Now, not everybody would be received this well, but Nehemiah, because of his work history, his dedication, King's like, all right, what do you need? So Nehemiah prays. He prays first, and then he says, I need to go to the city and rebuild the wall. I need to go help. I have to act on this. He's got to leave work for a while. He doesn't stop there. He says, I need letters to the rulers of the territories I'm going to go through so I have safe passage. Also, I need a letter to this fella Asaph who can get me timber and building materials to rebuild the wall. It's a practical need. And the king grants it. And listen to how Nehemiah responds. It's because the gracious hand of God was on me. Not just because the king likes me, but the gracious hand of God was on me. So he goes, letters in hand, and he gets some army officers to help keep him safe. And at the end, we hear about these two guys that are unhappy with what C's doing. Keep them in the back of your mind for a second. They're going to come up again later. But for now, he starts to go. He's asked for some help, and now he's going to go. So let's read Nehemiah 2, verses 11 to 18, and see what happens next. I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few others. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me except the one I was riding on. By night, I went out through the valley gate toward the jackal well and the dung gate, examining the walls of Jerusalem, which had been broken down, and its gates, which had been destroyed by fire. Then I moved on toward the fountain gate and the king's pool, but there was not enough room for my mount to get through. So I went up the valley by night, examining the wall. Finally, I turned back and re-entered through the valley gate. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, because as yet I had said nothing to the Jews or the priests or the nobles or officials or any others who would be doing the work. Then I said to them, "You see the trouble we're in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace." I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. They replied, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began this good work. So Nehemiah arrives. He rests for a few days. Then he takes like a scouting trip, and he's only got a couple people that know what he's doing yet. So he's still keeping it pretty low key. He's keeping it quiet. So he goes out to inspect, and he doesn't do a full circle around the wall. He heads mostly to the south. Up at the northern part of the wall, that's where Jerusalem was most vulnerable to attack. He probably knows there's nothing left up there. So he goes and inspects the areas that probably have the most left, and he sees the destruction. He sees the danger that's possible. He takes in the entire situation, prepares himself for what's to come. Now he shares what he sees. He tells the officials, he tells others, you guys, you see it. You're here. You know the trouble we're in. Let's not let this stand anymore. Let's not be in disgrace. Let's rebuild it. This city should be the city of God. The city of the great king. Let's do something about it. Because it's entirely possible that the leaders there were just resigned to their circumstances, said, this is what it is. We're just here. It's not good. Nehemiah had to come from the outside. He had to come in and shake it up a little bit. And it worked. Right? They say, all right, let's do it. Let's start the rebuild. But it doesn't all go smooth right away. Let's see what happens here. Keep in mind those first couple of guys we heard about earlier on. Here's verses 19 to 20. We'll wrap up chapter 2 here. But when Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. "What is this you are doing?" they asked. "Are you rebelling against the king?" I answered them by saying, "The God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historic right to it." All right, so here's the opposition, guys, back from the beginning, and they add a third guy. Now, these are opposition, but these guys have some status. These are a big deal type of guys. We have Sanballat the Horonite. He's kind of going to become the main opposition to Nehemiah throughout this book. He held a position of what we would think of as like a governor over Samaria, which was about 30 to 40 miles north of Jerusalem. He hasn't had the title governor, but that was his role. And you got Tobiah the Ammonite. He was born into a powerful, influential family. He kind of led an area east-northeast of Jerusalem. And then you got Geshem the Arab. He's probably the most powerful of the three, also the least dedicated to kind of the cause of disrupting Nehemiah. He doesn't like it, but he's not super upset. But these guys, they mock, they ridicule, they come against Nehemiah. They oppose what he's doing. They say, "Are you rebelling against the king?" This is a political shot. Because here's the thing. Back in Ezra chapter 4, we talked last week, Ezra and Nehemiah, kind of one work all together. There was a letter written to the king in opposition of Jerusalem being rebuilt. It claims if that happens, Jerusalem would be a terrible city, no allegiance to the king, wouldn't pay their taxes, they would dishonor the king, it would be rebellious and wicked, it would be terrible. So the king responds with an order saying, "Stop rebuilding the city until I order it," Ezra 4:21. So they're kind of, they know this. They're pushing this on Nehemiah. And Nehemiah says, because of God, we will have success. Not because the king's already said so, but because God gives us success. We're his servants. He will give us success. You guys are opposing it. You have no share of claim to Jerusalem. But we, as God's people, honoring God, will have success. He had to act on his opposition, and he did. So we're talking about action today a little bit. So we're going to focus on action, and there's this thought from the book Familiar Stranger by Tyler Statton, who's a pastor out in Portland, Oregon. And he says this about action. There are two types of action, action for and action from. Action for is done for a desired end, and that motivation dominates Western culture. Invest time, money, or labor to get something back in return. Action from, on the other hand, is done not to achieve a desired end, but from a conviction. I invest my time, money, or labor because I've been freely given more than I'll ever be able to give away. Think about that idea of acting from today. Acting from a conviction, acting from a calling from God. We're going to look at three kind of action steps we can do. And the first one is asking for help. Nehemiah asked the king for time off. He's got to go away. He's like, I'm going to be away for a while. And he's like, hey, I need safe passage. I need some building materials. He asked for that letter. The king's a guy that is able to help Nehemiah. So he asks. We see other examples, biblical figures of people asking for help. In the story of Esther, Mordecai goes to Esther and says, hey, can you help with this? Esther has an audience with the king. She goes and also asks the king for help. It's all about asking for help. Now, I'm sure this is a moot point because every one of you sitting here is super great at asking for help. Anytime there's an issue, you're like, I'll just go to somebody and ask for help. It's totally fine. I'm great at it, right? Really? Come on. Asking for help can be hard. It's difficult. When we planted this church, we had to ask for help. Here's a little spoiler alert. When you start a church, there's a lot of things you don't know how to do. We talked to people that had planted churches and were like, hey, what would you do again? Or what would you not do? We went through a training cohort. We even had to work with this company. There's a company called Start Church that helps you do all the legal stuff. Ryan spent plenty of time on the phone with our fella from Start Church to help you with all the legal documentation and getting registered and all this. We had to ask for help. We all may need to ask for help with what God calls us to do. There is nothing wrong with asking for help. There is this false and dangerous mindset we can get into. If I ask for help, I'm not good enough, right? Or I'm not the right person for what God has called me to do because I have to ask for help. We got to fight that mindset because it's not at all true. Think back to last week. We talked about being ready to go for God. Part of being ready is being open. Be open to asking for help. So if it's on the more personal side, right, God's building us as followers of him. On the personal side, if the action step God has called you to is deepening a Christ-like relationship, it's supposed to go deeper, and you're like, man, I know it. I have no idea how to do it. Ask somebody that's done it. Hey, what questions do you ask? How do we have those conversations? What should we do? Or if the action step God's put on your mind and your heart is like, man, there are a lot of people in my neighborhood that they just can't keep up with the yard work they have all summer. I feel like I'm supposed to serve, but I can't mow every lawn and weed every garden. Ask for other people around you to help you do it too, or for the tools or things they have. Ask for help. If the action step is to cut out a sin or behavior in your life that doesn't honor God, you're like, I gotta get rid of this. Ask somebody to help you through it, to hold you accountable. Asking for help, it takes humility and it takes honesty. It takes humility that you can't and shouldn't do it alone, and honesty about what you need in order to act on what God has called. Right? Be honest about what you need to live out the calling God has in your life. Nehemiah and Esther were both humble and honest people, and look what happened. God granted them favor, and now they're celebrated biblical figures that we talk about. They asked for help, so ask for help individually. How about hometown in the next 5 years? I would love to see churches asking each other for help for things. If they would collaborate together to serve God as a unified body of Christ. For churches, ours included, to put down theological, worship style, and church structure differences to do something together. Ryan announced our Meadow Ridge ministry. We do that because another church asked us to help. That's it. Very simple. They asked us to help, and now we do. It is such a powerful display of the full unified body of Christ when we work together. So let's make room for churches to come together. We sang, make room, break down the walls. Let's do that as churches, not just as individuals. I don't know exactly what that looks like for us in the next 5 years, but if God puts something on the heart of this church as a whole, we won't be afraid to ask for help to act on it. Second piece is prepare. Nehemiah is clearly called to act, but he hasn't actually started rebuilding the wall yet. We haven't gotten there yet. He's preparing. Part of acting is indeed preparing. He goes, he observes the state of the wall. He rides around. He does this scouting trip. And then he shares his plan, his preparation. In Luke 14, 28 to 30, Jesus says, "Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, 'This person began to build and wasn't able to finish.'" Jesus said, prepare. Prepare. Count the cost. That's part of preparation. When the ideas for Hometown came up, we didn't just jump in and have a service 10 days later. It actually started in my driveway and in my garage. Stacy, Ryan, Julie, and I would sit around and we just threw ideas at the wall to see what stuck. But what do we want it to be? Values and church culture and styles and even the name. I don't know how many domain names do you think we bought before we came up with the name? Like, we threw things at the wall. Ryan was reserving every domain name so we had a website. All this kind of stuff. We had to think about it. We had to prepare. We had to sit on the calling from God. Take a look around before doing too much. I have a quote written down. One of the people we talked to in preparation for this is a good friend of many of us, Steve Cecil, who planted years ago. And he said, "People rush into the doing part when they need to focus on the being part." We had to prepare by observing and just sitting for a little while before we started. So part of acting is actually preparing. So how do we prepare ourselves to act what God has called us on? Well, here come those spiritual disciplines again. We've talked about them all throughout the year. In 2026, Hometown's theme is spiritual health, and we get more spiritually healthy by putting those spiritual practices in play. So for the preparation piece, I want you to focus on prayer and solitude. Talk to God and listen to God. Because once you know God's put something on your heart to act on, you're going to start to hear every voice telling you what to do. Everybody's going to have an idea. Your social media feeds and timeline, it's going to pop up whether you thought it would or not. The algorithm's gotcha. All right? We want God's voice to be the strongest and most clear about how and what we're supposed to do when we act. So through prayer and solitude. And then observe. Check out the walls of what God's called you to do. Right? What's going on in your neighborhood if you're going to serve there? What's the demographic? Or if it's that relationship you're supposed to deepen, what's the dynamic in that relationship? You know, what are your similarities? What are your differences? How do you communicate? All that kind of stuff. Observe. Or if it's dealing with a personal sin or behavior, what leads you to fall in to that sin or struggle? What tempts you to be there? Be honest with yourself. So in all of these, observe what part of the wall is really severely damaged. And what part, hey, we have a foundation here. Take a good look. And then share. Now we share what's going on. What has God called us to act on? And share with clarity and with purpose. Observation leads to clarity. We have to be really clear about what God is calling us to do, so it's God's calling and not our own. Be clear. And then we share, and the purpose of sharing might be to get other people to join you. See, here's the thing. Being 100% committed to what God has called you to do doesn't mean you do 100% of the work. It might mean other people get involved. It might be, hey, let's serve our neighborhood together. Hey, let's read the Bible together and pray together and deepen that relationship. Hey, I'm struggling here. I want to correct it. I know it. I'm making this change in my life, and I want you to know it to help me get there. Preparing is part of acting and building our personal lives as followers of Jesus. So how do we do preparation for our church? Well, keep meeting together. Keep showing up right here. Hebrews 10:25 says, don't give up meeting together, which some are in the habit of doing. The more we're together, the more closely we're connected, it prepares us for whatever comes next, whatever God calls this church to act on. And observe, who can you connect with more that's here? Who don't you know real well that you could connect with? How could you be involved more? What ideas do you have? Something we could do maybe a little more of? Then share it. Share what our church is about with others. And they don't need you to like sign up to be like a hometown marketing intern or anything, but like be an authentic representation of the church God has called us to be. When we first launched Hometown, and we kind of put out the here's what's happening, we have a paragraph in this writing. It's from July 2020. It says, we believe strongly in a relational style of ministry and community. We believe that knowing others and being known is something we all desire, and our hope is to create a space where that can happen regularly. We believe that none of us are perfect, but that growing together in our imperfections will bring us closer to each other and to God. We desire to be a safe yet challenging place to grow in our faith. Ultimately, we're excited to bring a style of ministry that resonates with us to love and serve our community. We shared that. So prepare. That's part of action is preparing. And then be ready to face opposition. Nehemiah starts acting. He's got a couple people on board. They're getting ready to go. And now comes the opposition. And we see opposition throughout the Bible. How many times do we see Jesus get pushed back on by the Pharisees? Or in Acts chapter 4, Peter and John, they get called into the Sanhedrin. They've been preaching the gospel. It's been spreading. They're healing people in the Sanhedrin. They're like, guys, you got to stop. We don't want this to spread. Stop. They're opposed. I'm going to tell you the story of one of the first oppositions to hometown. It was me. Full disclosure, it was me. It's true, because when it first was kind of came to my heart and Julie brought it to me about planting, I didn't want to do it. I was like, no. I was graduating seminary. I was like, yeah, but if we plant, then that's going to be really hard, and it's not existing, and I got to figure it all out. I'll just go look for a job. So I did. I spent a month sending off resumes, interviewed with a couple churches to see, and I said, okay, give me a month, and if I don't find anything, we'll do this. My dear friend Ryan, throughout that entire month, actively prayed against me getting a job. Great friend that he is. You gotta do what you gotta do. Jerk. But here we are. I didn't find a job. Who would have thought? So here we are. Prayers answered. But I was like, I didn't want to do it, right? We meet here in a senior center. We don't own the building, right? So we have to come here. Not having your own space can be a pushback. We had a week last summer where we found out on a Thursday or Friday, hey, something happened in the building. You guys can't be here Sunday. So we had to do something else. One of our first Easters here, we were doing our pancake breakfast, and we needed to use the kitchen. Well, we don't have the keys to the interior doors, and it was locked. We're like, oh, no, we need to be in there. Well, there's, you can't see it because it's covered up, but there's, like, that little, like, service window in front of...
I feel like I need a visual.
Lindsay knows what's... I don't have the picture with me. I'm sure they can find it. But so there's this tiny little window. They're going to open it up. We'll just do a visual because why not? We're not going to reenact this. There's a little window there. You can see it. There it is. I got up there flat as a pancake, and Ryan and Chris pushed me through the window so that I could get in there and open the door from the other side.
Head first,
and I like went, there's like a sink over there, so I went down in and had to do it.
The kids were a little scared to go.
Yeah, the kids wouldn't do it. I mean, come on. So I did it. Yeah, that was fun. But not in your own space. It doesn't seem like an opposition, but it can be. You can push back on what you're doing. Opposition comes in a lot of ways, but it's going to come. On the personal side, people might not like what you're doing. You're acting on some call from God, and they're like, why are you doing that? That doesn't make sense. It won't make a difference. You're just being naive. You're giving up that behavior, you're no fun anymore. Or maybe the opposition is there's a better option out there. That's what I was looking for, right? I can make more money over here. This one's more fun. I enjoy this more. I already know how to do this thing. I'll just go do this. See, enticing options can actually be opposition to what God's called you to act on. Opposition doesn't always come from attack. Sometimes it comes from invitation. An invitation to do something other than what God has called you to do, even if it's great. But that's still opposition because it's not doing what God's called. On the church side, opposition comes people that just don't like churches. There are people you will encounter, you probably know them, that for a variety of reasons don't like churches and what they do. You might get opposition from churches that are other churches, other Christians that don't like how maybe we do things or what we believe in certain ways, right? This also happens. There's opposition from all over the place. For both your personal opposition and church opposition, I encourage you to stay confident and stay connected. Stay confident in who God is and who he's called you to be and who he's called his church to be. Be connected to God, allowing him to be your influence, your guide, your provision, your sense of peace, and your fulfillment. And stay connected to each other as a church. If you're feeling opposition, you don't face it alone. Carry it together. That's why we're here. It's heavy. I'd love to say acting on a calling from God is going to be all sunny skies, clear water, white sandy beaches. But it's not. It's just not. Face the opposition, but don't let it stop you from acting. We need to act when God calls. Remember those action steps. We'll wrap up here. Ask for help. There's nothing wrong with needing help and asking for it. It's helping you act on what God's called you to do. And then prepare. Take some time to look around, observe, see what's going on. Look around the area, what God has called you to do. And then share it with clarity and purpose. And face the opposition. It will come. Maybe as an attack, maybe as an invitation. But in the face of opposition, stay confident, stay connected to both God and to the church. Know what God has called you to do and act on it. Let's pray. God, I thank you for this morning. God, I thank you for putting on Nehemiah's heart to act. So God, I pray that we would be open to acting on whatever calls or convictions you have on our lives. God, that we wouldn't be afraid to ask for help. We take the time to prepare And be ready in the face of opposition, God. But throughout it all, God, we would be so sensitive to your calling and your convictions. We would have the drive and the confidence to act on what you have for us. And God, I pray when needed, we would get each other involved, God, that we would be a unified church as we act on what you've called us to do. I thank you that we've been that for 5 years here as a church at Hometown, God, and for the next five and then on. So we thank you for this morning, God. In your name, amen.